Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 40. I feel like we should have a little champagne or something, but we'll get right into it. Thanks, Chris. I'm here with Chris Pinkham, the co-founder and CEO of Nimbula. Welcome.
Thank you, Gary. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And my name is Gary Ornstein. I'm host of the Cloud Computing Show. We'll jump right into the industry news. A couple of small announcements and one big acquisition that I wanted to talk about today. Novell made some noise. They threw their hat into the cloud ring, obviously with a hypervisor agnostic strategy for doing some cloud management and cloud control. Did you see that announcement, Chris? And any thoughts there?
Yeah, we did see the announcement, and you know, it's another project that you know we're going to be watching and evaluating. It shows a general trend of trying to figure out how to enable this disconnect between applications and infrastructure so that things can change more rapidly. So that's a positive trend.
Yeah. I mean, Novell, can they make a comeback? Is this just something that they have to do? Or it just seems like, you know, they had this entrenched position in enterprise networks for so long, and, you know, it's not what it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they, you know, they've got the SUSE Linux branch, which is important, but a very definitely distant number two
yeah.
to Red Hat and some of the open Linux projects. Now, I grew up in university world in the late 80s, just to show my age. I'm beyond 40. At the time, IPX was dominating the network space, and I was trying to preach, you know, TCP/IP and the internet so we can all connect together, and was being laughed at about how, you know, this was really Novell's space.
Right.
So
we need
shows
standards.
How quickly things change, and utility. You know, we need, you know, the platform that scales the best and allows people to innovate the most will ultimately win.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think this is really more of a base case. They have to have something, then they're going to rise up in the ranks of cloud providers. But it's good to see them participating. A couple of other small announcements that came from Amazon. One is their micro instances. So, you know, along with this trend to people building servers with Atom processors and ARM-based processors, it seems like, you know, the BMW Mini is upon us now in cloud computing. And then also, I just saw yesterday that they announced their own Linux distribution or Amazon machine instance around Linux. Obviously, you have a lot of familiarity with Amazon. We'll talk about your background there later on. But any takeaway from these two announcements?
Yeah, well, I think the micro instances goes after a certain market segment to look at EC2 and go, wow, you know, 40 or 70 or whatever it is dollars a month is more than I'm paying for my teeny weeny little virtual machine slice that I'm running on, you know, a hosting company where I park my blog and my domain
right.
name server, and you know, and it doesn't do much. So spending
right.
a lot of money on a fixed unit of capacity that has, you know, 1.5, 2 gigs of RAM and just isn't necessary. So I think they're going after a slice, a certain market segment, which is kind of the mini hosting environment. It doesn't do a lot of compute, doesn't consume a lot of resources, just some kind of network presence. So that's an interesting move. I'm not sure how small you can go there until you kind of break down the virtual machine model, because the virtual machine itself is a pretty heavyweight container.
And you can only put so many on a given
Correct.
Server, physical server.
Right. The operating system itself takes up, you know, a significant amount of resource, even the smallest ones, you know, it's hundreds of megabytes of disk and lots of RAM. So I think there's kind of a bottoming out there, and but it's clearly going after that segment. And the AMI distribution is an interesting one. You know, since the very beginning of EC2, Amazon's effectively been distributing an AMI. You know, the early AMIs that you could download and modify and resubmit were
right.
You know, Red Hat based. So that's been evolving, and the, you know, one of the interesting things about a company like Amazon is how they do an incredible amount of stuff themselves
right.
behind the scenes. You know, there's enormous economies of scale and motivation to, you know, just work on what they think needs to be worked on.
Yeah, and I read, and I don't know if this is confirmed, but that this was an Ubuntu-based distribution. Do you know any
yeah,
details
I didn't have
there?
No, I don't have any details.
I just read that,
yeah,
so not confirmed. But
yeah.
then the other thing I read in Jeff Barr's blog post, and I didn't read that there, was that they just stripped out so much stuff to make it ultra lightweight, and
yeah.
and maybe there's no, you know, it's not a coincidence that it was announced in the same week as the micro instances. Sort of goes hand in hand if you want a really simple lightweight way to get started. Following in the string of billion-dollar acquisitions that get labeled as cloud, even though they might not be cloud. And I'm referring to the storage activity with 3PAR recently. But HP continues their spree. They bought ArcSight, a security company, with, it was, I think, over $1 billion, 1.2 or 1.5 or something. It just seems like there's no shortage of accumulation of assets in this arena. And I think ArcSight probably had a much more cloud capable or cloud oriented product than 3PAR did, so maybe makes a little bit more sense there. And we'll see what happens as the security race comes up. And we were talking a little bit before we hit the record button about some takeaways from VMworld. You were around the show at that time, and you were started to say something interesting about, you know, being very product focused, being versus being very service focused. And I just wanted to get your take, sort of. The last show we did was actually at VMworld, and now everybody's had a chance to have it settle in. What was your takeaway from the show there?
Yes, so certainly a lot of activity. You know, we were on the fringe. You know, we're still operating a little bit behind the scenes as we mature our product and work with our beta customers. So we were in and out of VMworld. We didn't have a direct presence, but lots of interesting product, lots of interesting startups. And I think two different large observations. One is the cloud metaphor, I think everybody agrees, is becoming really confusing. You know, a few years ago, it meant the idea that you didn't have to own the infrastructure. Your applications could run in, hypothetically, any infrastructure as long as it met your service needs. It took on the flavor of the application being disconnected from the infrastructure and can roam everywhere, API-driven multi-tenancy. So those are good features for any enterprise, any service provider infrastructure to take on. The truth is, though, that the large cloud service providers, the entrenched ones, you know, the big technology companies, they don't build their services by cobbling together lots of these different products. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing two very different philosophical approaches, and it'll be interesting over time to see which customers choose. You know, the Google, Amazon, maybe Rackspace, a little more familiar from an enterprise infrastructure point of view. There tends to be a lot of abstraction away of what the underlying systems are, more into what the service does and mm-hmm. how it performs. So whether the enterprise cloud will evolve in a similar direction where it's much more appliance-like, as we're seeing from companies like Cisco with UCS, where, you know, there's more of an integrated vertical stack. You're not expected to have these major integration products to get your APIs up and running. Or it becomes the existing set of enterprise applications and enterprise services evolve incrementally and becoming a little more fluid, a little more adaptable. And that's an interesting movement to watch. I'm not quite sure which way that ends. I think the end result is the service is almost entirely automated, and what matters is the service level, the APIs, what you can do with it, rather than what the components are.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think we're still in the component stage of people getting comfortable and talking about it, and certainly, you know, point of our conversation today is to talk about more options for cloud stacks or cloud operating systems. We're into September now, but I joke that this summer was the summer of cloud stacks, as well as the summer of smartphones, which are not disconnected, by the way. And so we can talk a little bit more about that in the next section. So let's jump into specific questions for you, Chris. And just to remind our listeners, Chris is the co-founder and CEO of Nimbula. And before we jump into some specifics about the product, Chris, for those who don't know, maybe you could give us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, you know, as I mentioned, I'm an internet old hand. I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa, where I worked at the University of Cape Town, which is an interesting source of lots of cloud leadership talent. I ran an ISP and got very excited about the internet in the early 90s and moved into Amazon.com late 2000 to run network engineering and eventually run the IT infrastructure at Amazon. So I had a great insight into the scale out of one of the most important successful web companies of that era. Mm-hmm. And during that time, there were a couple of things going on. We were in general, not just at Amazon, trying to figure out how to break down these monolithic applications and code bases into services. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know if people talk anymore about SOA, you know, but
right.
the buzzword may be gone, but the discipline of teams working on their own services and then connecting them over the network, that's certainly a long-living trend. At the same time as the infrastructure was commoditizing, into these standardized, fairly homogeneous, perhaps Linux-based systems, and we were getting this incredible system sprawl. So that perspective gave some insight into, well, how do we provide infrastructure more as a set of automated services for these distributed service teams to consume? And that was the genesis of what's now known as the Amazon Elastic Compute Cloud, which I conceived and led until its launch in 2006, I believe that was. So since then, the whole idea of building large-scale infrastructure, which has been a theme in my career, and commoditizing infrastructure components to a great extent, that continues with Nimbula today, where we're trying to build a software stack which allows enterprises of all different shapes and sizes, service providers, to homogenize, commoditize their infrastructure and provide a similarly flexible but much more identity and policy-driven service to their infrastructure consumers.
Mm-hmm. So when you've obviously seen a lot with the whole cloud stack arena, both at Amazon and what's happened around, it's a crowded arena. And there's a lot there. Obviously, when you sat down and said, there's a need for Nimbula.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the core themes or core trends that you saw that weren't being met where you said, there's more room here that merits a whole new company?
Yeah, I think it's true in some respects that it's a crowded, it's definitely a noisy field. And I think what people have been focused on, incorrectly in our view, is the whole notion of the API and how you take a virtual machine image and consume the API to have it deployed and run. I mean, I think that's...
It's become a rallying cry where's your API?
Yeah, and I think it's a mistake. You know, I'm with the group of people that maybe we're a little quieter. But we get on and build services, and the services themselves define the API. You know, you've got to figure out what your software does and what your service delivers, and around that you build the best possible interface you can. If your starting point is, here's a popular API, I'm going to provide a system that maps to that API, you've immediately confined yourself to what that original system does.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are things we need to do still. You know, Amazon was a huge leap forward in terms of demonstrating how you don't have to commit early and big on infrastructure in order to deploy an application.
You could lease rent it.
Correct.
You sign up.
You know, you can commit late, and you don't have to reserve massive amounts of infrastructure. You don't have to wait 8 weeks before you can deploy even your proof of concept application. But there's a lot that's missing, and both from Amazon as well as the company is trying to build internal services that somewhat replicate the Amazon infrastructure as a service notions. So we're very much more focused on what are the useful services that people need in order to build, firstly, a highly automated infrastructure. We think that's generally lacking. That's certainly, when we were building our business plan, and Willem and I did this in this office where we are now, We built the business plan and we looked and were just generally not convinced that the technology was being built that allowed folks to very rapidly stand up new data centers in different parts of the world, build services if they were successful, have them automatically, rapidly scale out, work with commodity infrastructure so that, as components fail, the management system automatically recovers. So these are concepts at the core of our software that, we think are new and interesting. It's not just about taking a machine image and having it launched through an API that says launch this machine image. There's a long road to go, clearly. The other reason why we think Nimbula could be an important business is there aren't a lot of production deployments of systems that have the same kind of flexibility and agility of an Amazon service.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fair amount of exploration. There's a fair amount of proof of concept and kicking tires and so on. There's not a lot of production. From a timing point of view, I think we're pretty well placed. That this year, it's all about evaluation. Next year and the following years, we think there's going to be much more in terms of deployment.
I agree with you. This is still a time where the largest companies have their exploration teams doing evaluations and I don't know if we've yet seen the big budget rollouts in certain cases. Yeah. Now, another trend I've been following, the virtual desktop infrastructure, I think like finally got to that stage now, right? It got through a year of planning and research and got into the budget, and now you see people spending real dollars on it. Yeah. But with this whole cloud stack arena, maybe still a little bit of time. So I just want to follow up on an item there. So, you know, you said, okay, so having the API becomes the sort of base case or the denominator on which you want to build a more sophisticated service. Can you give us an example of a place where you think, you know, just pick one service out as an example that, you know, isn't being delivered the way that you envision it might be?
Authorization. So the notion of everybody has a separate identity, that there's a, you know, some sort of hierarchy to this identity where who you are and who pays the bills and so on can be managed by, you know, and at an organizational or group level. So that's a really important concept. Amazon made some recent announcements around different kinds of accounts, whereas previously everybody, you know, you swipe your credit card, you get a key, and then in the same organization, everybody had to email the key around, you know, to make use of the service. You didn't know who was consuming which resources. So, I mean, a very powerful service, but lacking the identity as well as the authorization around giving policy-based hints on several things. One is who may manage the infrastructure, who may add users, who may configure, you know, introduce new machines into the infrastructure, who may upload, register new applications for use by people. Then how do you delegate access to these applications? So if I upload an application, I might want Group A to use this, but not Group B.
These are all the kind of enterprise controls that companies love and gravitate to, to turn all these knobs and bells and whistles.
And it's very much what we're focused on, and is at the core of Nebula Director system. So those don't exist in the public cloud context.
Yeah, well, they do exist a little bit in that there's a lot of add-ons that you can layer on top of, right? But now you're cobbling together.
Sure, but it's not at the core of the infrastructure service where
it's not embedded in there.
Right, you end up having the identity for building virtual machines and then an entirely separate identity and rule base for managing applications. So that's an example. That's something we're pretty well focused on and we think is very important, particularly in an enterprise context, but will also be in a service provider context. And Amazon does get some criticism from customers who want more information on how costs are being allocated to their different users in an organization. That's fine. They're working on that. So that's an example of a new service for which there's no standardized API. So we have to extend that as well as incorporate attributes of that into, for example, our launch mechanisms. So if you launch an application in the Nebula context. An application, by the way, can be a complicated application consisting of lots of distributed system components, but you can assign security notions as well as infrastructure attributes in that launch plan that tie nicely into the identity and authorization mechanisms we have there. So again, we've broken the existing API, which is, in the Amazon case, very simple. It's, you know, I'm identity X, and I have this machine image Y, and I want N copies of it, please.
Right.
Perhaps in this availability zone and so on. So the other comment I'd make about APIs is at that level, at that sort of REST level of managing and deploying applications, it's not that hard a problem. You know, and I think you've quoted, I think it was the OpsCode guys, ex-Amazon colleagues of mine, as saying it's not that hard to rework the management systems to talk to a different API. So, you know, we can do that reasonably easily. And then finally, you know, it's up to folks like us if there's demand, and there certainly is. Customers tell us standardization and not being locked in and is really important. We'll build the connectors, you know, which we're doing. You know, for the subset of services that Amazon offer, you'll be able to use, you know, compatible on-the-wire APIs to talk to our service for those services, but clearly for the ones where we don't overlap, you'll have to talk a different language.
Right. So we kind of skipped over the sort of core product introduction. So maybe just for listeners who aren't familiar with what you're calling Cloud Director, and there are, by the way, quite a lot of details on the technology page of your website.
Yes.
I commend you for sharing that stuff ahead of time. It's great for people who want to dig in. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Plenty of detail there. But to give us the 1 minute product overview.
Okay, so we're building a software stack that people will be able to download shortly. We'll be going into public beta in a matter of weeks, where they will be able to use this to stand up their own cloud infrastructure with just push-button simplicity, and that will incorporate all of the necessary infrastructure control around network, CPU storage, resources, as well as the policy services around identity, authorization, federation into public cloud services, version 1, EC2 only, but you know, we'll add others as required. It's hypervisor agnostic. We think we're entering an era where the hypervisor will become about as important as the device driver on your Ethernet card. It's just a small piece of software that you know governs some aspects of the hardware, and the game will be around the services. But what is the utility of this infrastructure? So it's a software product that people will be able to use to you know automatically stand up in a very simple, low configuration kind of way, a very flexible, very highly scalable compute cloud.
And the way that I read on your website is you position this as behind the firewall. So that's sort of a term that you use. Maybe instead of saying private cloud and to avoid a big discussion and debate, but this is really for people to deploy and then build their own cloud infrastructure.
Yeah, the behind the firewall just refers to it's on infrastructure that you control. You know, as I'm sure everybody agrees that, that there's some resistance to making wholesale bets on public infrastructure. So we think for a long time, there'll be mixes of infrastructure. We may see newer hybrid models evolve, which kind of look a little bit public, look a little bit private, you know, depending on the time of day. But fundamentally, there's going to be computers in the data centers. There's going to be large-scale public services. And we want to make it really super simple for the developer community or the operations community to deploy, manage, and change their applications, no matter where the they find the most appropriate infrastructure to use.
Right. Now, one of the things I read on the website is you talk about making use of existing infrastructure and not just you know your existing rack-mounted servers, but also maybe your existing storage arrays or your existing you know maybe non-standard rack-mounted servers or networking equipment. You have a whole portion of your technology map focused on that. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, you're not necessarily advising someone to do a completely greenfield build out in order to use the Nebula products.
We certainly don't require it. We deal with a lot of the complexity of managing heterogeneous components, so we're friendly and absorbing in terms of the ability to talk to existing systems. Our storage service allows you to, on the fly, create storage volumes, authorize who may have access to these volumes and mount them on demand with certain applications using standard storage protocols like iSCSI. So your existing storage infrastructure can be preserved. But certainly we expect many of our early customers, first of all, to evaluate using existing infrastructure, but as we move into production, folks will be using this as a way to build their new infrastructure.
Is it really intended more of as a migration to get to a more standardized rack and stack, homogeneous components with varied services on top of it?
Yeah, many of our beta customers, there are different kinds of camps, but a common thread is we want to build a next generation cloud like infrastructure that's maybe close by, but not exactly the same as the existing data center infrastructure. And then as applications can migrate into this infrastructure, we'll expand that.
Yeah.
So that's a common
use case. So big picture question for you. How much of this is going to be migrating apps that exist to this new infrastructure versus rewriting or tweaking or new apps on a more cloud-friendly infrastructure? I mean, that's one of the big debates.
Well, it's a debate, and I think to some extent the existing x86 infrastructure as a service layer is a very compatible layer for many existing applications. There are very few applications that you can't bundle up and run inside a Windows or a Linux virtual machine, as long as they're Linux or Windows applications, and run them in EC2. They'll run.
Sure.
What tends to be missing are more systems integration assumptions around, you know, what VLAN am I on? Am I on the same broadcast domain as, you know, my neighbors? And do I have a hardwired, you know, default gateway, you know, or do I depend on some, you know, proprietariness in the underlying network? That tends to be where you get some stickiness, but the basic executable in the libraries, they run pretty well.
Yeah.
So we're doing a little more to make it easy from a network integration point of view. Our software caters for two different network operating environments, one that's highly compatible with existing enterprise networks. So you can associate, you know, Nimbula virtual Ethernets with your existing virtual LAN configurations. And so all of we preserve the network semantics for applications that depend on it. But we also offer a new way of thinking about network security and network discovery and so on, which scales much better and allows folks to have much more of a policy-driven security mechanism where you specify more on an identity of the individual, the identity of the application, who may communicate with each other. And then in a highly changing, very large-scale world that's very independent of underlying network infrastructure, the policy gets enforced in real time. So there are new approaches being built, not just by us. There's an interesting startup called Nicira, which is working on how do you configure network flows in real time. So there are new ways of approaching the security problem that are much more scalable. But the basic compatibility tends to be around peripheral issues rather than the core.
So I got a lot of questions here on the networking side, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit.
Okay.
And as you mentioned, your first position at Amazon was network engineering, and right? So this is obviously core to your expertise. There's been a lot of comment. We've had comments on the show. James Waters and I have comments about, you know, the networking and the public cloud infrastructure kind of stinks, you know. But at the same time, the fact that they don't offer robust networking capabilities, in my opinion, is part of the whole economic premise of public utility that's a shared infrastructure.
I think that's correct. Yeah.
So what's the outcome? I mean, people won't be able to offer cost-effective virtual machines in the cloud if everybody has a dedicated reserved gigabit Ethernet pipe, you know, all the time. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so people talk about having to relax the application requirements from a networking perspective to work in those environments versus trying to preserve, mm-hmm. you know, the old school, you know, hardened or soft hardened VLAN kind of, what's going to happen?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, a large utility provider will have to deal with is the unpredictability of demand. You know, so, you know, there are very large companies, won't name them, they tend to get upset with me if I name them publicly, but the very large companies that come along and just consume enormous amounts of resource very, very rapidly, you know, so hypothetically, you know, call up or use the APIs and say, you know, spin me up another 1,000 virtual machines. And that creates a lot of stress on the system, that the system could over time improve to handle better, for sure. But I don't think it's a fundamental issue of the underlying technology. It's more the premise of, in an elastic compute infrastructure at very large scale, you don't always know what's coming and going. Things are changing very rapidly. So I think a lot of the variability in network performance that people report in EC2 has more to do with the interference by different applications with respect to each other. So you can make
different app, meaning somebody else's application.
Sure,
right? A common joke you see on Twitter is, you know, the guy with the virtual machine on my server, it must be doing something crazy right now because I can't get any performance.
Yeah, well, there is a certain amount of resource reservation, a certain amount of resources dedicated to you. You know, that there are network technologies which allow you your fair share of, you know, the local network infrastructure. That there's very little to guarantee you that performance to all endpoints in the infrastructure because there isn't that much bandwidth available for everybody. So I think there's maybe a mindset approach a little bit similar to the way we thought about the internet in the early days. You know, performance is unpredictable. You know, we don't know what's going on in the middle and performance can vary and so on. And while that's true, on the other hand, you get this enormous benefit, you know, that all of a sudden you can talk to everybody, which you'd have to sometimes make trade-offs. But I think those services will improve. I think, you know, folks like us, folks like Amazon will be inventing ways to make that performance better and more predictable. And, you know, we've seen that with some of the Amazon announcements around, initially availability zones where you can confine your applications to a particular service. And in Nimbula Director, you have the notion of being able to say, I want my applications distributed more closely because I care more.
Proximity. About
them. Correct.
Yeah.
Or I want them distributed because my, you know, I'm going
remote,
trading off reliability, availability.
Right.
So you've got to make those trade-offs.
So, but let me get to the hard question, the point blank question. In your opinion, to move everybody forward and for this whole thing to cloud thing to happen in to its fullest extent, is it a matter of we need better networking capabilities to deal with existing application programming mindset, or we need to change the application programming mindset to be capable of less reliable network infrastructure? Where do you stand on that side, those two sides?
I'm going with both. so we need
which
both.
One's more important?
So I think the cloud metaphor works best when the application development mindset takes the view that the infrastructure is faulty.
Okay.
Inherently faulty. And
but that's not going to happen overnight. You still
it's
have
not going to happen overnight.
Okay.
We're seeing it happen. I mean, it's been happening for 10 years. And,
yeah.
I think any interesting development, you know, by anybody under the age of 30 is happening in that paradigm.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
I don't think, you know, send Gary email, not me, if you disagree. But I don't think software engineers under the age of 30 are building applications, with some exceptions, that depend on, you know, this network port or this host being available 99.99%.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the interesting thing, is that people are developing the topmost level of reliability,
yeah,
by being aware that at the network level or the instance level, there's going to be some unreliability,
right,
and accommodating for that in the application.
Yeah.
It's a very new mindset, like you said. It's the newer generation of programmers who are doing that.
So we think the reason I agreed with both of those statements is both things need to happen. You know, the infrastructure operators as well as the technology providers such as ourselves, we're clearly going to be working to improve the availability and performance of what we do.
Sure.
But at the same time, if you know, Amazon put, maybe for the first time, you know, this big price in the sky, you know, this is what infrastructure can be provided at. And
yeah.
And some people can say my infrastructure is a little bit cheaper, and maybe it is. But I think by and large, it's not true. And a lot of people look with envy on that unit cost. But the trade-offs you make to get there are interesting, and you do have to accommodate them.
Yeah. You mentioned there's some beta customers. You have some abstract, or not so abstract, but some unnamed use cases on your website. Give us one or two. And what I'm really curious about is the use cases where, there's a lot of options, right? So why in this particular use case, A or B, did those options not work? And why is Nimbula sort of the lead contender?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you two. So one is very much an enterprise play, but a large multinational enterprise, unnamed, unfortunately, who is trying to figure out how do they manage this infrastructure around the world, lots of different places, where they can provide a better quality of service by having a common service layer, APIs, if you will, predictable performance, but in a highly distributed fashion where they don't necessarily have talent on the ground to install operating systems and configure nodes and configure networks and so on. They want to get out of that business. So they're very interested in the idea of, from a single operational window, being able to do two things. One is deploy this infrastructure everywhere in an entirely automated way, maybe by shipping boxes on site or having a local, you know, partner just deliver hardware, rack them and stack them, connect up the cables, push the power on button, and go home.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole distributed data center automation and cloud layer there, if you will.
Right.
So that's one enterprise use case. They also have use cases for doing test and dev of applications in public clouds. And from the same operational mechanism, just being able to specify those public clouds as just another location. It's just another data center. It's a big one.
Right.
But it's just another location. It's all very consistent, very easy, and they have the identity and authorization support baked in at the, you know, the cloud OS layer to be able to do that. So that's one.
And what do you think was missing from other solutions that they gravitated to in the Nimbula solution?
I think it goes back to the fact that they would have to take a whole bunch of different components
Okay, back to some of your services that are being built in on top of the APIs as well.
Yeah, so you know, there was really nothing other than if they put a team of five people to go and, you know, script a whole bunch of systems, automation, identity packages, authorization systems, you know, figure out how to install the management server that communicates with the worker nodes, figure out how to react if that fails, or, you know, so we just take care of all of that automatically. So that was very attractive to them. Other use cases are, we're seeing a little bit ahead of schedule, actually, some interesting new business models where companies are trying to figure out, you know, they've got some investment in infrastructure. They've maybe been around 10, 15, 20 years. They've got large data sets. They develop lots of interesting technology. And rather than just provide sort of a SaaS application that people get to with the web browser, maybe they can provide lower level services where they expose their data, they expose their application services in a secure, controlled way in shared infrastructure. So in a, you know, in a
more like a Salesforce force.com combination.
But in a much smaller, much more vertically integrated with, you know, the core business of what they do. So it's not a general platform or necessarily
it's a platform around their specific service offering.
So they're
interesting.
So they're the, you know, the behind the firewall metaphor is maybe an unfortunate one in that most network system admins have made this assumption that if you're behind the firewall, you know, you're safe.
Right.
Which, by the way, is wholly untrue. But the behind the firewall concept breaks down here. You know, in the old terminology, you're maybe into the DMZ here, where you're inviting other people to consume resources. But you still need to give them all an identity. You need to be able to revoke that identity, measure and charge for what they use, you know, have some sort of network policy about which services may talk to which other services. So those are interesting use cases that a couple of the more technological companies are pursuing.
Neat. Let's dig into the details for a second on the product. So I decide I'm going to launch a cloud service provider, and I want to have my own infrastructure. I've bought all my servers. There's nothing there. It's bare metal. Do I put an operating system on first, or is it just putting the Nimbula software right there get started, where the OS sort of bundled in there?
Yeah, the thing we ship is basically a boot device,
okay,
which you somehow introduce into the network, perhaps on a laptop. It's pretty common. You then just power on the machines.
So there's no first step before I start with the Nimbula.
There needs to be some basic network configuration.
There's lots of physical steps, but there's no software step.
But there's no software step at all.
Right.
We lay everything down entirely automatically. All of the different services that make up the cloud service are automatically distributed, designed for failure. If a rack goes down, you know, the service will continue functioning in the other racks. You do this basically by just pushing the power on button, giving us some small configuration, you know, some identity. We need to assign some network addresses, you know, a few lines of policy. But from then on, it's entirely automated. As new nodes come on, the resources are discovered and added to the resource pool. If they're taken away, they're, you know, marked as unavailable, and resources get reassigned elsewhere. So very little to do.
Got it. I want to take a little side note. You have a highly distributed company, California and South Africa. How do you deal with that from a cultural and technology operations perspective? Any secrets? I think this is a valuable skill in this global world, and I'm always looking for insight.
Yeah, so we have two teams. We have one here in the Bay Area, and we have one in Cape Town, South Africa. And so fortunately, we have two founders in the company, and I live here now, and Willem is in Cape Town. So both teams are equally well looked after from access to leadership in the company. From a development point of view, we first of all, the development tools, the development methodologies have evolved, you know, very nicely over the last 10 years. We're not inventing distributed development. So, you know, code can be accessed, and, you know, instant chats and collaboration tools allow people to stay in touch. But fundamentally, we break our work up into different services. So it's everything is services oriented, to go back to the buzzword. And teams can, for long periods of time, operate somewhat independently from each other. And then when you get to an integration point where there's some, you know, QA and test where you're interacting with other services, that's where there's a little bit more interaction. But for long periods, people can develop autonomously. And, you know, and there are some great collaboration tools where, you know, people can stay in touch the same way they do, you know, with their home lives. in a distributed world. So it's becoming less of a challenge. We spend lots of time on airplanes, mm-hmm. Willem and I, and we also try and get everybody together a couple of times a year. So and so far we haven't had anybody complaining about going either to San Francisco or to Cape Town, right?
Yeah, those nice places. Tell us what we can look forward to, in your opinion, industry-wide and Nimbula-wise, you know, over the next few years. You know, you talked a little bit about this services infrastructure on top of the APIs, but just give us your picture and, you know, parting thoughts on that.
Yeah, so we think there's a great deal of commoditization underway. We think what the badge on the box is becomes less important over time as a result. We think hypervisors become somewhat commoditized, and that, you know, different applications can function on different hypervisors. We see much more automation coming into play, much more of an integrated approach taken, so that people can provide much more of a self-service experience from, you know, the conception of an application to the deployment. The end result is a couple of things. One is everything gets cheaper. The unit cost of compute gets cheaper because you're using commoditized components, and better operations means, you know, you have more to spend on the innovation. That in turn drives more change, that more applications are going to come online. We're going to find different ways to update and change applications rather than this kind of annual update path that we've seen. And that will create this virtuous cycle, if you're an infrastructure vendor, I think, where there's going to be much greater demand and more CPUs, mm-hmm. more ports, you know, bigger infrastructure, much more going on.
Yeah, there was some data recently, a blog post, or maybe it was High Scalability, I can't recall exactly, about, you know, the cloud is driving more server sales, not fewer.
Sure, and you know, we think that continues, you know, and the larger enterprises, if they're not thinking about how do they manage a million machines,
right?
Know, they make it.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you know, there's, I'm certainly being a technology guy, I think there's a lot more room for more productivity in the world,
sure,
and more software and more applications. So the easier it gets for people to do new applications and new tools, the more we should have, and it keeps going.
Yeah. And you know, hopefully, but I think this ends up being true, that the rate of innovation that we're seeing from some of the, you know, the world's best technology companies like Facebook, Twitter, their ability to innovate and rapidly improve the service, we hope that catches on in, like, banks, for example.
Yeah.
You know, much more dynamic, much more interesting solving of problems over time, much, much higher rates of change. So we'd welcome that. We think that'd be good for us.
I think anybody would welcome change to some of those industries, like banking, myself included. I'm eagerly awaiting Bank Simple. I don't know if you've heard about them, but if they're listening, we're waiting. Great. Well, let's jump into the next section of the show, Cloud Tips, where we share some ideas, insights. Chris, you mentioned you'd come up with one earlier. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so in the context of collaboration tools, you know, we're all getting very used to tools like Facebook and Twitter, which allow us in real time to share our, you know, deepest or shallowest thoughts to a large audience for us to group together. And we're experimenting with software from a company, it's a service actually, from a company called Jive Software, where what Jive do is they provide a similar kind of collaboration experience that you would get from Facebook, except it's enterprise friendly. You know, it's a way of communicating with your colleagues, it's a way of communicating with your customers, and very important to us in our distributed setup where we have employees around the world, being able to share photos and discover who's who in the organization and mm-hmm. What they're up to, what their likes, dislikes are, you know, photos from the recent, you know, debauched party in Cape Town. It's all very, very important in team building. So so that's my cloud tip.
Excellent. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. My cloud tip this week is more on the analytics side, particularly the visual side of analytics. You know, we're all trying to keep track of everything that's going on with our websites, with various services that we use. And I came across a company recently called Metrically, which is allowing folks to quickly and easily collect analytics from a variety of services, combine some of those, do cross-referencing. And it looks to be a really easy, simple, accessible tool for that kind of stuff. I haven't used it yet. I'm looking forward to it. There's obviously a lot of solutions out there, but Metrically looks pretty neat, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Well, thanks very much, Chris. Really appreciate having you on the show.
My pleasure. It's been a privilege.
Can people go, websites, Twitter addresses, to get more information about you, the company, whatever you think is most relevant?
Yeah, if you go to nimbula.com, N-I-M-B-U-L-A, you'll find links to our Twitter, Facebook, everything page right there, links to news resources. Nimbula.com, everything's on the homepage right there.
Great. And for me, Gary Orenstein, you can find me on Twitter, full name Gary Orenstein. We also have now the Cloud Computing Show Twitter account running. That is just Cloud Show for short. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in today. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. And most importantly, you can subscribe on iTunes. Just search for The Cloud Computing Show or click through the link on the top right of our homepage to go directly to the iTunes store. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you, Gary.
And we'll see everybody next time. Bye-bye.